Savannah had been used as a military base for some of the top-secret silo-based ICBMs that had dominated American military policy for much of the latter part of the previous century. It had brought wealth to the city and prosperity to the merchants, builders, tavern owners, and storekeepers. It had also brought the wrath of the Russians, raining molten fire from the heavens, wiping the town and the surrounding region to the northwest, away into an arid wasteland of black glass and rolling sand. It was a dangerous hotspot that nearly 100 years after Skydark still sent the rad counters off the orange section of the scale, way across into the red. The raft drifted on south, carried by the gentle stream of the Tennessee. The clouds had vanished, and the afternoon saw temperatures rising well into the upper 90s. Everyone except Ryan took turns steering the raft, following the center of the river as it wound its way through the deserted land. There was nearly half a mile between the banks, and they saw nobody to threaten them. At the place where the rad count was highest, they saw a number of small, capering creatures along the river's edge. They were less than 3 feet in height, and several of the vaguely humanoid muties seemed to have extra limbs, with one or two having secondary skulls. But there was a heat haze lying over the river, and it was difficult to be absolutely certain. Jack dabbled his hand in the river to cool off.
Ah! What the fuck was that?
He stared at a bead of blood that clung to the tip of his white finger. They all looked over the side of their craft, trying to see beneath the sun-dappled surface, shading their eyes against the bright sunlight. Mildred leaned so far over that her beaded plaits nearly dangled in the water.
Eels.
Several tiny eels clung to Mildred's plaits. They were no more than 4 or 5 inches long, thick as a man's finger, and had a dozen protruding eyes and staggeringly ferocious triple sets of needle teeth.
Get them off her!
Mildred pulled back as JB and Jack tugged the vicious little creatures off her and tossed them back into the river.
Oh! Little bastards!
After that, everyone kept clear of the edges of the raft and avoided the places where the logs didn't fit well, with gaps going straight down into the river. Just past Savannah, the Tennessee forked, split down the middle by a gigantic spit of muddy yellow sand. Doc was at the helm.
Right or left? Should I sail for port or starboard? Starboard or larboard? Red light or green? Keep off the lee shore, Mr. Hornblower. Pass the starboard. Better yet, pass the port. Clockwise or counterclockwise or Widdershins about.
Ryan had been sitting on the roof of the cabin. He stood, balancing with care, trying to see which of the channels seemed the better option.
Try left, I think. No, make that right. Seem to be shallows to the left. Yeah. Steer to the right, Doc.
There's a boat ahead.
Everyone looked down the Tennessee, where it bent to the right. Just on the crown of the bend was a small rowboat, with a pair of oars rising and falling in perfect rhythm. It was coming upriver toward them, making fine progress against the sluggish current. Because of the way they were facing, the oarsmen had no idea that they were closing fast with the raft. Ryan waited until they were 50 yards ahead, and then hailed them.
Yo, the boat!
Wah!
The man on the left started, his oar digging in deep, the loom rising and hitting him under the chin.
Ow!
He sprawled flat on his back in the bottom of the little boat. His companion tried to look around while carrying on rowing, which meant that his oar completely missed the water, flailing around in the air like a demented windmill.
What the fuck?
The man was on his back, kicking his little legs in the air, his arms whirling as he tried desperately to recover his balance and regain his seat on the thwart. Both men were elderly, with identical white beards.
Sorry to startle you, but you were going fair to hit us.
Yankee bastards! Sneaking up on a couple about their lawful fucking business and trying to run them down and fucking sink them.
Hey, watch your language. There's ladies on board here. And you would have run straight into us if we hadn't warned you.
Now that they turned their skiff around and had it gentled down, the two old-timers also calmed themselves. One of them wore a battered Stetson, and he raised it to Christy.
My apologies, ma'am. My tongue sort of ran away with me. Guess we owe you thanks for saving us from getting plowed 3 fathoms deep.
Eel bait is what me and Jericho would have been.
We seen the eels, vicious little bastards. Figured that it would be triple bad news if you went over the side with them anywhere around.
Many a good man been lost to them.
You live nearby?
Littleville off a side stream of the Tenner called Down the Line. 64 Christian souls. My name's Daniel, and this is my wife's brother, Jericho. Hardly ever seen anyone coming south on the water, not out of the Docklands.
The raft continued to drift with the current, the little boat keeping station with it. Ryan didn't feel like going into a lot of detail about who they were and where they'd come from.
We're traders from up yonder.
Where are you heading?
Ryan jerked his thumb down the river, still keeping a tight grip on his stick, balancing against the gentle pitching of the craft.
Y'all visiting Shiloh Battlefield?
Their boat was drifting away from the raft as they worked at the oars to try to hold it on station.
Thought we might. How far is it from here? Can't be a great distance.
You northerners sure speak kind of strange. Can't hardly understand it, you know? Strangle the words in your throat.
How far?
The two old men looked at each other, simultaneously putting their heads on one side, like a couple of world-weary crows on a fence, watching an unwary frog. Ryan caught Christie's eye and grinned at her.
A clumsy old raft like that should get you to the landing by Shiloh Roundup.
Want the tour of the battleground?
That'd be interesting. You know someone does that down there?
Oh, yeah. My brother's cousin's your man. Named Judas Portillo.
Judas? Does that mean we shall have to pay him 30 pieces of silver for his guiding? Or he might hang himself?
Why would you do that? A handful of jack or some chawing tobacco or a couple of rounds of 38s will do him fine. Silver wouldn't be no good nohow.
Let it pass.
Well, we gotta go. Losing all the good ground we sorely won against Tenor. Good luck to you.
Judas Portillo. We'll be sure to look out for him.
Yeah, and you tell him he owes me for a faucet in his shack.
Jericho and his partner began to pull away together in fine style, propelling the little boat over the water, swiftly widening the gap between them and the raft. Ryan waved to them, watching as they moved off, shrinking until they were only a tiny blur on the surface of the meandering Tennessee. Later, there was a sudden flurry of light rain as the sun set on their starboard quarter. JB stayed at the steering oar while the others crowded into the cramped little cabin. Jack peered out of the rough-hewn window at the leaden sky.
Won't last. Gonna be a shower.
You sure?
Yeah, Ryan. Blue sky coming this way from the south. Get here soon.
Look for a good place to moor us up for the night.
Jack had been correct. The rain quickly stopped, the sky clearing, bringing the promise of a fine evening and night. Once more, they all went out onto the wet timbers, watching the wooded banks of the mighty river drifting by. Mildred looked ahead into the north bank.
Some sort of sign there.
Who's got the best sight?
Ryan shaded his eye, seeing the black lettering on a white board, but unable to make out what it said.
Not I. I can see a blob of white that could be this sign you speak of, but I can see no detail upon it.
Something landing.
Shiloh?
JB brought them closer to the right bank of the river.
No, begins with a P, I think. Yeah, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh Landing. And it says, a light here for the Shiloh Battlefield Experience and Tour. Spelling's kind of rough. This is the place.
A small collection of ragged tar paper shotgun shacks lined a narrow trail that ran westward from the banks of the river. Rat-eyed, dirt-poor men and women came out of shadowy doorways to peer suspiciously at the outlanders, some of them making no effort to hide crude cap-and-ball pistols or smoothbore muskets.
Is it all right to moor here?
At first, nobody would give him a reply. Then a large woman wearing a dress torn across her pendulous breasts, smoking a corncob pipe, came swaggering out of a building that called itself the store.
Morin's cost good jack, Outlander. You want free? Then go back to spill up Snake Creek. Or farther down the Tenor, you'll find an inlet called Dill's Branch. Mile or so downstream's Lick Creek. Free there.
How much to moor here?
Oh, depends on what you got. You want to look after safe.
We got enough blasters and plastics to blow every building in this ragged shithole to the other side of Memphis. And to chill anyone who tries to make out they can threaten us with their cheap trade blasters.
Oh, back there, bud. No need to get your balls in a twist, mister.
So, can we tie up here for the night free? Is that what you're telling me?
Sure. I guess so. You come for the tour of the battleground.
Maybe.
Oh, then likely you'll want Judas Portillo. Kid of mine, young Judas is.
We heard word of him on the river. A couple called Jericho and Daniel said that Portillo owed him for a faucet put in his new shack.
Oh, damned old goats! Reckon if there's any owing, then the foot's in the other boot.
Thanks for your kindness, lady. Your store carry food?
Oh, traded for a handful of them bullets you got for those pretty blasters.
If the food's any good, you got a deal.
And I'll send word along to Judas to come see y'all while you eat.
Been a long time traveling downriver. We'll take some supper and then sleep some. We'll see Portillo at breakfast.
I'm Ma Jode.
Still trampling out the grapes of wrath.
You a few buckets short of a full flood, mister?
Just a small jest, ma'am.
Real fucking small.
That's what they all say.
We'll tie up safe and snug and come along for some eats.
You'll be welcome.
Nobody had very high expectations of the food offered in the store, but Ma Jode surpassed all their hopes and set aside all their worries. She had served them a fish soup to start with, snapper flavored with red and green peppers. Several of the little eels had been cooked until they were more like dry husks, added to the dish for extra flavor. The main course was pork, stewed long and slow with sharp apples and a spiced gravy, with sweet potatoes and thin-sliced carrots and turnip greens, fresh cornbread on the side with salted butter. There was cider to drink, chilled and dry on the palate, to wash down the good food. Everyone was too full to tackle the steaming platter of cherry cobbler, except for Jack.
Mm. Good food.
Just as well we never got to look in the kitchen. Ma doesn't look like she places hygiene high on the list of culinary essentials.
Ma Jode appeared from the scented kitchen again.
Woo! Shooey! Sweat's running down across my tits and soaking over my belly. Huh, hotter than the ovens of Satan in that kitchen. Y'all want some coffee, Sub?
No, thanks. But that was real good. You want to settle up now with us?
Sure, Outlander. Full meal for the six of you? It's 38s we need best. Those Outland 4 and 9 mill shitters aren't much use around here.
6 rounds.
Each?
Call it 12 between us.
Call it 4 rounds each, and you got the best deal this side of Ole Miss.
You got a problem, Ma Jode.
How's that?
You push your luck. You were doing it out there about mooring the raft. Now you're doing it again.
Oh, think I don't know it, stranger? Of course I do. 12 rounds of 38s, and you also get a real good breakfast in the morning. And I'll make sure Judas Portillo's here to show you around Shiloh.
Deal.
The woman held out her hand, horny and calloused, the size of a small ham.
I'll take him now.
After breakfast.
You might just up stakes and sail away in the night. That wouldn't be neighborly.
We'll be here. Around 8.
She nodded slowly, her small hooded eyes staring at Ryan.
Be here, or be hung out for the gulls.
Ryan and JB had agreed that it would be a good idea to keep a watch for their night at Pittsburgh Landing. It wasn't all that likely that any of the locals would risk taking them on, but you didn't get old in Deathlands by placing your stakes in the square marked likely. Jack took first watch from 8 through to 11, then dock until 1 in the morning. Mildred and JB had agreed that they'd share a double watch from 1 until 4, and Ryan and Christy would be together until the dawn. The weather was calm, with just a few high clouds blown in tatters across the face of the moon. Ryan slept poorly, still plagued by the healing of the double wound in his thigh. It prickled as if someone had rubbed chilies into it, and the skin felt hot to the touch. Standing over him, JB touched his shoulder.
Time, Ryan.
No trouble?
Nothing.
Weather?
Dry, light northerly. Nobody moving around the ville that we've seen.
Ryan slept fully clothed. He pulled on the combat boots and slid the 6-hour into its holster. Christy was at his side doing the same, settling the short-barreled Smith & Wesson 38 on her hip. The moon was sailing low, and there was already the faint lightening of the sky, heralding the arrival of the false dawn. Ryan and Christy sat near the fire at the Pittsburgh Landing. There was a faint haze hanging above the surface of the water, and clouds of tiny gnats darted and danced, occasionally falling victim to the silvery leap of a large trout.
Wonder how Dean's getting along.
Don't worry, lover. Knowing that kid, he's probably taken over the running of the school by now.
They were just finishing an excellent breakfast when Judas Portillo made his appearance. The local guide to Shiloh Battlefield saw himself as something of a fop and dandy. He was a little below average height, slim, with long hair greased back with a heavily scented pomade. His face was fleshy, with the beginnings of a third chin, the lips thick, his eyes dark and liquid, with unusually heavy lids. His clothes had a faded grandeur to them. He wore a frock coat, not unlike Doc's, but without the macabre patina of great age, and two mother-of-pearl buttons were missing. His pants were tapered, dark blue, with a strip of black satin down the outside of each leg. Portillo's ankle boots looked as if they had been polished early that morning in a room with inadequate light. Parts of them were still smeared with river mud, and other parts gleamed like a mirror. He had an elegant jabot of slightly stained lace at his throat, which he tugged at constantly. As always, when he met a stranger for the first time, Ryan weighed him up for weaponry. There was a small caliber revolver of indeterminate make with pearl grips on his right hip and an enormous bowie knife balanced on the left. Ryan also had a shrewd suspicion that there was a derringer, probably in a spring release, tucked away up the right sleeve. The man's hat was a cream-colored Stetson decorated with turkey feathers. As he arrived at their table, he took it off with a sweeping gesture and bowed to Ryan.
I'm Judas Portillo. Have I the honor of addressing the Ryan Cawdor?
You're addressing a Ryan Cawdor.
You wish to be shown around the battlefield?
Yeah, how much?
Just a small handful of Jack, if you'll please.
I got a very small handful of Jack. Very small.
I am sure that you Outlanders won't disappoint me.
I'm sure. Just so long as you don't disappoint us, Judas.
Speaking of payment...
Ryan reached in his pocket.
12 rounds of 38s.
Oh, thank you, Outlanders. Don't worry about your raft while you're gone. I'll make sure it's safe and snug.